Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again.
Unbelievable.
Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 223 of the Last Round Podcast. Thanks again for coming back, or if this is your first time, welcome. Whether you're listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Audio Boom, or Twitter, we've now been posting our episodes the last couple weeks, full episodes on Twitter. So if you're listening to this on Twitter, we appreciate it. Jumping right back into it, fight reviews this past Saturday, the 27th of May, from the Vitality Stadium in Bournemouth on Sky Sports. Chris Billam-Smith gets the majority decision win over Lawrence Okolie and becomes the WBO Cruiserweight Champion of the World. Billam-Smith, they call him CBS, no affiliation to the actual channel over here in the United States, gets the majority decision by scores of 115-108, 116-107, and then 112-112. All right, Mike, what'd you think of this? There's a score of 112-112. There's one judge that looked at it as a draw. And then you have two other scores that are pretty wide. What kind of fight did we see here?
Messy one. A very messy fight that was hard to really score, because at the times, you know, when, you know, Okolie wasn't getting points, you know, taken from him for, you know, punching and clinching and stuff like that, then you have to score it, right? Even if it's a messy round and he's kind of punching, clinching, you know, Klitschko-esque from back in the day. I guess if it's working and it's been effective, I guess you have to score it to him, you know, sometimes. But I thought it was a messy old fight to score. I thought the right person won. I thought Chris Billam-Smith had a good game plan. I think Okolie leaving Shane McGuigan and going to, what's his name again? I forgot his flipping name. Tyson Fury's coach.
Oh, New York. He's in New York. Kronk Jim. Wow. Why can't we think of it?
Sugar Hill. Sugar Hill. I've totally forgot his name. I was going to say Sugar Ray. I think he's gone back. I think he's regressed. I think he's not as good. I think his footwork's pretty bad. It looks like he's scared to get hit at times. That's why he kind of, you know, punches, clinches, doesn't want to leave himself open at times. Yeah, it wasn't a very good performance from him. And I think, you know, Eddie Hearn's been proven right, you know, not paying him and not giving him all that extra money. And essentially, you know, Okolie fighting to get his release from Matchroom and going over to Boxer. Boxer have made it, in my opinion, it sounds like they overpaid to get Okolie to make him the face of boxing on Boxer. And it's completely backfired. So, if you're Eddie Hearn, one of your rivals in the UK has overpaid, stolen one of your fighters, and it's backfired, and he's lost his world championship in what, his second fight on Boxer, which, you know, isn't great. But all respect to Chris Billam-Smith, you know, came down to the gym, as, you know, I'm sure you've heard this story many times because they kept talking about it all week. Came down as a sparring partner for George Groves. I remember, you know, Sean saying that he would be happy if he picked up like a British title, a Commonwealth title. And, you know, look at the belief he's had in himself. He's gone all the way through and won the WBO world title. So great performance from him. Great performance from Shane McGuigan.
Okolie was the favorite going into this fight, right?
Yeah, because when you looked at it, it was kind of like big brother, little brother, wasn't it? You know, Okolie was like the top dog in the gym. CBS, you know, was in there as his kind of like his sparring partner to learn off him. But it was like they were kind of boxing in totally different, you know, areas. You know, everyone used to talk about, you know, CBS, like, oh, you know, if he wins a British title, Commonwealth title, that's going to be really good for him. Whereas Okolie was looked on, you know, ex-Olympian, you know, team Great Britain, and he was looked at, you know, to win a world title. I'd have said definitely going into the fight, Okolie looked to be the favorite.
I mean, we've obviously seen in the past in boxing where fighters will fight their sparring partners or their main sparring partners. You know, sometimes it's just to give that sparring partner a payday, as to say thanks, like, hey, you know, let's make an event out of it and I'll give you a payday for all the help that you've given me to prepare me for a fight. Sometimes it's like that. But a majority of the time, we don't really see the sparring partner. And people, you know, when they talk about it, when they analyze those fights, they say, oh, well, you know, that the sparring partner knows X fighter because, you know, they've been in the gym with them. So there's a chance that they could pull off an upset. But I feel like that's true. But I feel like the outcome of the sparring partner actually winning isn't as common as we think, looking back on the history. But in this case, it's true, right? Billum Smith was a sparring partner for Lawrence Okolie. I'm sure, obviously, that helps. And he was able to get the upset win. I mean, would you consider this an upset?
Yeah, definitely an upset. I think, you know, Okolie was... We all used to talk about Okolie unifying, if not going for, like, undisputed, and then moving up to heavyweight was the way that we all looked at him. We all thought he had, a very boring style that, you know, Shane McGuigan was kind of evolving and making him a little bit better, a little bit more watchable. But he seems to have obviously gone backwards since, you know, moving gym. But yeah, I would definitely would have said it's unusual, especially for the sparring partner to come in. But Chris Billum Smith, I think from early, I think it was definitely that fourth round changed it. I think Okolie was probably winning on the cards. I haven't checked, but it looked like he was kind of winning on the cards. And then, you know, that shot that they've been talking about all week and on other podcasts and stuff about, you know, Shane saying that, you know, he ducks down and does this, and he wanted Billum Smith to take a step to the side and then come around with the left hook, pitch a perfect punch. Literally, like as they changed, and that changed the whole entire rhythm of the fight into Chris Billum Smith's favor. So, yeah, it's good foresight from Shane McGuigan to obviously spot these things that, you know, Okolie did well when he was his coach and then essentially used it against him.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, would you say that Lawrence Okolie, at least before this fight, was the biggest name under Boxer and Sky Sports? Was that their guy?
Yeah, I think he probably was. I think he probably was, unfortunately. Yeah. They kind of spread their money out when they first started, didn't they? They signed, like, you know, a lot of female fighters, a lot of guys, you know, coming straight out of the Olympics. But yeah, I would have said definitely Okolie, especially on this, if you're looking at both sides of the pond, you know, as we say, in terms of the US and the UK, I'd said Okolie because he's he was a current world champion, right, at that time when they signed him.
Yeah, and like you said, Eddie Hearn and Matchroom, was that what caused the split? Is that Okolie wanted more money and Eddie Hearn, what did he say that in interviews?
Yeah, according to the interviews, you know, Okolie said that his contract had run out. Eddie was saying that he had one fight left. He was approached by, you know, Sky, Ben Shalom, and they offered him, you know, a huge amount of money, and he was going to be the face of boxing. And then if you remember, you know, like Okolie signed it, and then Matchroom were like, no, 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 you have one fight left. And then it looks like they went to court. And then Okolie, I think it was yesterday, he actually posted something like, hey, just so you guys know, like, they kind of settled out of court or whatever. And, you know, everything's cool now between, you know, Matchroom Eddie and Lawrence Okolie. But, yeah, obviously depending on how much money, you know, Boxer are paying him, it's not looking like too good a deal now, unfortunately.
I do wonder because, assuming he knew that he had one fight left with Matchroom and Eddie Hearn, why wouldn't he just satisfy it and then, you know, go on and try to negotiate somewhere else or renegotiate his contract with Matchroom? But maybe Boxer and Sky Sports, you know, they approached him and they're like, hey, you want to sign right now? We'll get you over right now. And maybe, obviously we're speculating, but maybe he told them like, well, I have one fight left with Matchroom. And they're just like, well, just, you know, we'll pay your legal fees or something. You know, I wonder if he's like, okay, well, if you're going to pay my legal fees, because they're going to sue me for breach of contract. You know, I wonder if maybe Boxer was involved in that. Like, oh yeah, no, we'll pay them, you know, cause it's just kind of like, you have one fight left, you know, why not do it? You know, if you're as good as you say you are and get the win, and then go on. I don't know. Maybe it was like a spur of the moment opportunity with Sky Sports and Boxer. Like, oh no, you have to come now. You have to come now. Cause if you fight 3-4 months from now, the opportunity might not be here anymore. Maybe that was it. Maybe that was it. So he just took the risk.
It was something to do with, he was supposed to fight a named opponent. The opponent ended up getting injured and dropped out. So he ended up fighting a lesser opponent. And then Eddie was saying, well, that fight's actually outside of the contract because it was at a lower amount or something like that as well. Because, you know, less popular opponent, Roccoli's team were like, no, that's part of the 5-fight deal. And they got into some dispute around that. And then that was how Roccoli said that his team said he was finished. Eddie was like, no, that one fight was outside of the 5-fight deal that we'd initially agreed. Something along the lines of that.
It's interesting to hear discussions like that because, or interviews or insights, because you know there's details in these fighter contracts like that that say, hey, we have you for a 5-6-fight deal, but those fights all have to hit a certain threshold in terms of, you know, a rating or a money, or the opponent has to be at least ranked above this. You know, because you know those details are in there, and you don't think about that. You just think about, oh, it's just a 5-fight deal. He can fight, you know, whatever, you know, some journeyman for all those 5 fights or something like that. You know what I mean? So, but I'm sure those clauses and those intricate details are in a lot of those fighter contracts. I mean, it's interesting to see. We should get a business person back on to. We've had people on before discuss like boxing contracts and stuff. We should do it again. Those were interesting conversations. But yeah, do you think they run this back? Rematch?
According to what they said straight after the fight, yeah, if Akoli's a man of his word, I think he will probably run it back. It's kind of, where else do you go apart from the rematch if he doesn't move to heavyweight? And I think Boxer are probably banking on earning their money back from Akoli when he steps up to heavyweight. When you're in the heavyweight division, it's heavyweight money. So
maybe that's a good way to speculate why Sky Sports and Boxer picked him up, because they're like, oh, okay, he's going to fight in heavyweight. Right now, they might not be making money while he's in cruiserweight in terms of the attention that they want, but they know, okay, eventually he's going to heavyweight, and we're going to be a part of that ride. You know. Especially since they lost, because Anthony Joshua, his Sky Sports deal is over, right?
Yeah, he's exclusive with DAZN, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'm sure this is, I mean, it's just like we've had conversations in the past, like, you know, there's promoters out there and networks who hold on to certain fighters because they know, okay, this guy's eventually going to get a shot at the bigger names in that respective division. So let's just hold on to them until it pays off, until they get to that point. You know, I mean, because it does, that happens. And sometimes you have to overpay in order to keep yourself in that position from a network and a promoter standpoint. And you just hope that the investment pays off, you know? Yeah. Yeah. That happens. That happens. Also this past weekend from the Manchester Arena in Manchester on DAZN, a rematch from earlier this year, or was it last year?
No, earlier this year.
February?
I think it was like 3 months, pretty much.
Yeah, I think it was February, right?
Yeah, date to date, yeah.
Yeah, February. So last 3 months. So we got a quick turnaround for this fight. Lee Wood gets the unanimous decision win over 12 rounds against Mauricio Lara. Lee Wood regains his WBA Featherweight Championship of the World by scores of 118-109 twice and 116-111. But prior to this decision and this actual fight, Lara was stripped of his WBA title because the British Boxing Board of Control, and correct me if I'm wrong, deemed it unsafe for Lara to make weight after he had a check weigh-in during fight week. So they didn't like one of his fight check weigh-ins that he had before the actual weigh-in. They didn't like where he was at. So they stopped him and they said, well, I mean, am I getting it right there? Is that what happened?
Yeah, he weighed in during the week, and it obviously must have weighed in, you know, heavy. And then obviously, I think it goes by like a percentage, like how much over he was, and he was over what they felt was, you know, safe for him to cut to make weight. So they then told him that I think the lowest he was able to go was 128 pounds. Well, 128.5, I believe, is what they were saying. He was the lowest he could go. So, yeah, he was stripped of the title. The title was only on the line for Lee Wood on the night, unfortunately, and kind of made a drab performance from Mauricio Lara, in my opinion.
Yeah, so I've seen some criticisms with that. And I know we talked about it a little bit, where Mauricio Lara kind of just seemed like he wasn't really going for the win. And it probably had to do that he lost his title. He's like, well, if I win, I'm not going to win the title. You know, and it's not like he was undefeated. He's already had a couple losses. So he's like, oh, I've tasted defeat before. And now they split 1-1. So there's only, you know, they should have a trilogy rubber match, right? You know, I'm sure Lara kind of looked at it that way. But yeah, I think, you know, obviously Lee Wood boxed very, very well. But Lara did seem like he wasn't, I mean, would you use the word disinterested? Like he wasn't really interested in going for it, you know? And I think it was because he lost his belt and he couldn't get it anyways, even if he won. So he's like, well, what's the point? You know, just kind of took the energy out of him and the motivation, I guess, which sucks because it, you know, it could have been a totally different fight, totally different fight. But yeah. I mean, do you think if this never happened, if Lara was never stripped, he made the weight, everything was okay, do you think it still would have turned out the same?
Yeah, we'll kind of never know for sure, but I think I'm guessing it's down to like a combination of Lara probably went away, was living that Roberto Duran life, you know, when he beat Sugar Ray, and was just eating well, partying well, celebrating back home. And the next thing he gets the call, like, hey, Mauricio, they've activated the rematch clause, brother. You've got you've got X amount of weeks to lose that weight. And he was probably huge. You know, if you've just won a world title and you go back to, you know, Mexico and stuff like that, I'm sure he was probably never having to pay for a drink, free food everywhere he went. Probably piled on the pounds, and then kind of like Duran when he went in for that rematch with Sugar Ray, and obviously we had the no mass because he was losing. He probably felt super sluggish because he just burnt all that weight off faster than his body wanted to. I'm guessing it's, you know, something to do with that. He was probably trying to burn the weight off, and then, you know, they weren't happy with him. He burnt the rest to get down to 128. Plus, you know, like you said, like in his head, he's thinking, well, you know, win, if I win this, I don't win my title, but you know, I might win a rematch or something like that. So yeah, I think he probably just came in like super huge and that just affected him. He gets in the ring and he's just, you know, it's just not there. The tank's not full because he's burnt so much off just having to make weight.
How much do you think it also affects when fighters have to travel, you know, across the world to fight? Like maybe the time difference and you know, your body getting used to, you know, the new environment, I guess, in a way, you know, with especially the time difference. I mean, does that,
yeah,
you know, does that play a factor? I mean, because it wasn't like he, when did that first check-in for the weigh-in happen? When they said, oh, you know, you can't continue. What do we know? What day was that? Like a Wednesday or something? Or
I believe it was midweek. I think it was Wednesday.
Yeah. Because I think they, if I remember correctly, or I think you might have mentioned it, he was like at 128 point something.
Yeah, I think he was allowed to get down to 128.5, but I think there was rumors that he got, like when he arrived in England, like he was looking huge. And then, you know, everyone was kind of, okay, like he's going to have to cut a lot of weight. And then, yeah, he obviously just didn't get it down fast enough before the, you know, the midweek check, which is, you know, it's unusual. You know, they do it in the UK for title fights, but they don't do it in every country. I know like some of the governing bodies like the WBC will do that. You know, they'll do that during actually fight camp just to make sure people aren't, you know, going crazy on their weight cuts. But
and IBF has their like their same day 10-pound
the rehydration, yeah,
right,
the rehydration of the 10 pounds, which was, you know, kind of what cost Lee Selby in the later part of his career because he couldn't, you know, rehydrate, you know, as much as he wanted to. But you know, I mean, it's good. But I've heard some of the people this week, I know like George Groves used to, was kind of like a weight bully, as we call him. So he was saying he would just cut weight twice. He would cut weight, you know, all the way down on the Wednesday to weigh in, rehydrate again, and then he would cut weight again for the actual weigh-in on Friday.
That's nuts, man.
Yeah, which is nuts when you think about it. I'm sure when you're younger, your body bounces back a little bit better, but, you know, to do it, especially with some of the old-fashioned ways that they do it, you know, just taking all that, you know, all the liquid, all the water off your brain and stuff like that, it's not healthy. And, you know, hopefully with the sport evolving over time, we'll come to a better way of being able to do it.
Yeah, I think you're right when you initially explained it, that Lara, you know, got the world title, was on a high, went home, just he gained a little bit too much weight, and then he's like, then they reactivated their, because usually they have, from what we've seen in contracts, it's about 30 days to activate the rematch clause, about a month after the fight. I don't know when exactly they activated it, but yeah, and maybe, like, you're right, you know, went home, he's Mexican, probably went home, he went to Mexico, ate a lot, celebrated. I mean, I know how they celebrate. So, and then he didn't think there was going to be a quick turnaround. He's probably like, oh, I'm going to fight again, like, in 6 months or something like that. I have some time. And yeah, that could be it. You know, and then also it doesn't help that you're flying across the world. Your body has to acclimate to the time difference and all that. And, you know, it's different. It's different. And so
you hold weight as well with the flight. One of my friends is like a bodybuilding coach, and he has like a team of people. And one time I didn't know that, but like to do the fights. So, like, well, sorry, when they go over there to do the competitions, they have to go over there like days early because something to do with the flight or something like that is it helps you be kind of your body stores water and stuff like that. So. Yeah, that's why I'm assuming it's, you know, better to wherever you're fighting at, get there early so you can acclimatize and, you know, then, you know, start cutting the weight. So, that sort of stuff does affect it as well.
Yeah, I know. And people have to think about that too. Like Devin Haney, I think when he fought in Australia twice, got there, what, maybe like a month before or something. I know it was quite a while before, so it was a little different. But, yeah, you have to think about that. So, and Lara probably got there, what? Like
5 days, probably.
Like the week of, right?
Yeah, I think week of when you saw his pictures, I think he got there like just that fight week.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's a shorter flight to the UK than it is to like Australia, but still, you know, you're still getting acclimated, like we just talked about. So, do we see the trilogy? And if we do we see it in a quick turnaround within the next 3-4 months, like we did this rematch?
No. Trilogy maybe in the future. If Lee Wood manages to keep hold of the belt for a few fights, they may eventually turn around and do that. But I think the immediate one, and they'll probably go for an all-British dust-up of Lara against like Josh Warrington. Do that in like Manchester or Leeds. He obviously... typical, you know, all British fight, two big cities, the rivalry between the soccer fans and stuff like that. They'll play on that to bring in a huge crowd, because that will probably do more money than, you know, fighting somebody like Lara. You know, he's not going to be I'm sure he is a draw in the UK because he's been over there and demolished a few of the UK fighters. You know, we kind of like that. But I think, yeah, I think they'll do Warrington against Lara. Probably in the summer, and then, you know, Warrington against Lee Wood in the summer in Manchester or Leeds. And then Lara, unfortunately, has to go away, rebuild, and come back.
You think Matchroom puts Lara maybe like in Texas, California, maybe even Mexico in his next fight before the end of the year?
Yeah, he'll be busy. I think he'll be busy, especially with all the fights that Matchroom have. Yeah, you know, with the cards that they do alongside, you know, Canelo's promotions, I think that. Pardon me, we'll see.
They've had Lara on a Canelo card, haven't they?
I believe, yeah. When they had those Mexico shows, I think, yeah, he's been out there. And, I mean, we need a Matchroom one in California. We haven't had a Matchroom show in Southern California for a long time, it seems.
No, it's true, but I mean, it's, you know, a lot of people know New York and California. It's. For the fighter pay in general, specifically the fighters,
our taxes over here are pretty high. So, you know, that's why Vegas is so popular in Texas and Arizona and stuff like that.
When was the Chocolatito one?
Oh,
San Diego, we went to.
That was San Diego, yeah. The end of last year, I think. 2022?
I think that was the last one.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, you know, they're rare. They're rare out here. You know, especially Matchroom, they're essentially based in the UK, so they have to come all the way to California. It's a little different. So, but I mean, yeah, I it's unfortunate that Lara got stripped and then couldn't win the title back even if he won. So it probably took a lot of motivation out of him. But Lee Wood's able to get his WBA featherweight title of the world back. And like you said, maybe they'll do a all-British fight with Josh Warrington out there. And Lara will just have a comeback fight somewhere, maybe in Texas or even California or Arizona or Mexico even. And maybe by the end of the year, Lara fights the winner of Wood and possibly Warrington. Or didn't he beat Warrington?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. But whoever gets the title out of those two, I'm sure Lara's going to be right there. Assuming that this whole weight situation wasn't, you know, his body kind of like growing, because that's also something that obviously we talked about in the past here on the show. He's getting older. You know, I think he's like 24, 25. So he's not, you know, he's still very, very young. But, you know, as you get older, your body changes. So maybe there's also a possibility that he thinks that, oh, you know what? I need to move up to 130. My body's just not going to let me make 126 anymore. That's also a possibility. You never know.
I mean, whoever wins out of Lee Wood and Josh Warrington, you then have to face the final boss, the featherweight final boss, Kiko Martinez.
Yeah,
all roads lead to Kiko Martinez.
Kiko Martinez is all over the place, man. You don't know what kind of Kiko Martinez you're going to get. He's a 50-50 fighter in terms of, like, the night you can fight him, he could not fight. You can just take care of business. And then another night, he could be just the biggest killer. So, yeah, he's one of those rare fighters in the sport right now where you just don't know what you're going to get. You really don't.
If Lara moves up, like you said, you know, if that's a sign of the future, you know, struggling to make weight, then I want my fight that I've been campaigning for. I want Mauricio Lara against Emmanuel Navarrete.
Oh, yeah. I think we all want that. Even Lara against Valdez, even Lara against Burchell. All the fighters that Top Rank has at 130 pounds, essentially. Lara would, I mean, all Mexican dust up like that. Why not? But, I mean, you know, Matchroom has Lara. Top Rank has those other fighters. We've seen this story before, and we're going to keep seeing it again. I mean, it's difficult to make the fights, cross-promotion fights like that. It's difficult. So I don't think we're going to be able to see that for a while. Unless Eddie Hearn and DAZN overpay like they did to Jose Ramirez when he came over to DAZN to fight Maurice Hooker for the unification matchup, and Ramirez was able to win and then bring the belts back to ESPN Top Rank. Unless that happens, but I don't see that happening for this division or these fighters. I really don't. So, also on the card in the co-main event, Jack Catterall gets the 27th victory of his career with the unanimous decision win over 10 rounds over Dara Foley, who takes the 5th loss of his career. This was for the vacant WBA Intercontinental Super Lightweight title. So, Jack Catterall gets the win. Do you think he ever gets a rematch against Josh Taylor, or is that, should we not expect that until maybe a couple years down the line, maybe even next year or whatever?
Yeah, maybe next year. You know, he's got obviously a hard fight coming up, Josh Taylor, that is, with Teofimo Lopez.
That's a good fight. I'm excited for that fight.
Yeah, and then it looks like Jack Catterall after this one is going to be facing either Regis Progre, or maybe, you know, it's going to face the mandatory O'Hara Davis for the WBA, try to get himself positioned in the WBA. And then maybe after that, you know, next year, next Easter, next summer, something like that, if Josh Taylor's won and Jack Catterall's won those fights, I could see it being a bit of unification, you know, later down the line. You know, if they're going to do it again, they may as well try to, you know, that lovely boxing term, marinate it, you know, make it into the biggest fight, the biggest payday that they can. But yet again, how long, it wasn't that long ago we were saying Josh Taylor's growing out with this division and needs to move to 147. So, you know, where's he going to be physically by then?
No, that's true. Yeah, absolutely. And also this past weekend, you called it, Mike, you called it. Luis Alberto Lopez gets the 5th round TKO over Michael Conlan, who takes the 2nd loss of his career. And this was for the IBF Featherweight Championship of the World. You called it, Mike. I think you called it last week, and I think you've said it for a while that you never really bought into the hype that was Michael Conlan. Tell us why.
I kind of touched on it last week. It's, you know, when they were like building him up, he wasn't really getting rid of the people that were carefully selected for him to get rid of. Essentially, you know, he had the Irish fan base, and, you know, they'd always kind of bring him out as kind of a bit mean, but like a party piece, right? You know, he'd always fight, do like St. Patrick's Day, and they'd play on the Irish crowd over on the East Coast and stuff like that. But yeah, you know, he wasn't convincing people, you know, wasn't blowing people away and their carefully selected opponents, because they had a lot of money invested in Mick Conlan. So, you know, they were trying to make him look great. And to have 2 world title shots, Who's he beaten?
I mean, the Lee Wood fight, even though he did lose and it was dramatic, he got knocked out of the ring, that was a very, very good fight. And it wasn't like he got outclassed. He just got beat to the punch. But I thought he gave Lee Wood a really good fight, and he just ended up on the losing end, because that was very entertaining.
No, he did. You know, he was winning that fight. I think he was actually ahead on the scorecards, if I remember correctly, but to even have been in there with Lee Wood and to be in there again with Luis Alberto Lopez, who did he beat? Nobody. He just kind of bought that, put through there with Top Rank. You know, they probably bought him a little spot, you know, carefully selected opponents and stuff like that. I don't know. He's challenged.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
he's challenged twice. And like Virgil Ortiz hasn't had one chance. I mean, Roach has not had one chance. And I know I'm talking about completely different divisions, but I'm just kind of saying, you know,
in principle, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, you know, because he's only had 20 professional fights. I just didn't see it. And then when I was listening to a lot of the other podcasts, you know, this week, and literally everybody was picking Mick Conlan, and I was thinking to myself,
they're buying into the hype, man.
Yeah, they bought into the hype, or maybe it's just because they were British podcasts and they didn't want to go against Conlan, and you know, maybe he's been on the show and stuff like that. But I think even people who come on here, I think people listen because we're honest, right?
And I hope so.
Yeah, you know, and I didn't want to pick Conlan just because of that. And he got mopped, like I said. I didn't see him winning it. And Lopez is good. No offense to Mick Conlan. Lopez is so unorthodox and powerful, it's hard to see where the punches are coming from. And when you've had such a drilled-in amateur career, I thought that would actually go against him, and it did. Because he's so used to, you know, punches coming from certain angles, very traditional style of boxing. So when you're facing someone like Lopez, it's a hard task, you know. And I think Lopez is probably going to be champion for a little while, just because, you know, these last few performances, he's looked pretty good. He looked pretty good, and it's interesting to see what Conlan does again, you know, because some of the stuff that he tweeted, you know, he may pack it up. He may unfortunately pack it up, because he said he's going to go away and have a think. 31 years old, good long amateur career. It may be time to at least take an extended break, or, you know, maybe think about, you know, pursuing something else, you know, maybe media or something like that.
Is Lopez, does he have a deal with Top Rank?
Yeah, but he's been on Top Rank for a while. If you remember, he actually fought and lost to Ruben Villa, remember, from Thompson's Boxing.
Oh, wow. Here, local Thompson's Boxing, yeah, in Southern California.
Yeah, he actually lost to him back in the day, 2019.
Get Ruben Villa back in there. Get him an IBF featherweight title shot. Yeah.
And then he fought Andy Vences in 2020, and then that was when Top Rank picked him up. He then defeated Gabe Flores Jr., Isaac Lowe, Jason Vargas, Josh Warrington. And then obviously you had the fight for against Mick Conlon just on the weekend. So,
well, you know they're gonna use Lopez and they're gonna bring him over to the West Coast, either Vegas, California, Texas, and you know they're gonna put him in there in an all Mexican clash with what, Navarrete maybe.
Well, he's moved up now, and he's so you've got like Brandon Figueroa, Lee Wood, Ray Vargas.
Yeah, but who's top rank half at featherweight right now?
Isaac Dogbe,
maybe Dogbe, yeah. Joette Gonzalez.
Yeah. I could see him in there, just as like a voluntary. You mean without unifying?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think of the stable the top rank has, and then put them, you know, in a Mexican clash or maybe in September or something like that.
Yeah. So we know obviously PBC don't like to share their toys. So you know, looking at like a
well, yeah. I mean, no promoter likes to really share. Yeah. You know, they really don't. You know, they want a more bang for your buck if you're able to have the stable.
Yeah, you know. So we just overlooked the most biggest and obvious one, Robesi Ramirez.
Oh, Top Rank does have him,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Wow. You know what? I'll bet you they're considering that. They're looking into how to make that. Lopez versus Ramirez, you know?
IBF, WBO, unification.
Put that in Carson, in Los Angeles down here at the War Grounds, the StubHub Center, Dignity Health, Sports Park, whatever it's called now. Put that. I think that fight would do well.
Mexico, Cuba. I don't know if is that a traditional rivalry, but it's...
No, but they're both Latinos. I mean, yeah. It could work.
Yeah.
It could work. You know, I don't know. I mean, I know, like I said, like we talked about, California has high taxes, a little different for pay, but, you know, bang for your buck. And I feel like people would show up. I think it, you know, at Carson, California, and that outside arena, I think it could work. Summer's coming up essentially here. Outside on a sunny day and nice day with, you know, 70 degrees. I think it could work. I think it could work. All right, moving on. Also for this past Saturday from the Fantasy Springs Casino on DAZN for the WBO and NABO welterweight titles. Alexis Rocha gets the 23rd victory of his career with the fifth round KO over Anthony Young, who takes the third loss of his career. Rocha still staying active, man. You know, you got to give it to him. He's, you know, they're keeping him active, which is the best thing that you could do. I mean, him, Virgil Ortiz, Terrence Crawford have been on the outside looking in. Crawford for the longest, then Virgil, and now Rocha's in the mix too. Have been on the outside looking in for years now, if you go by Crawford's timeline at least, because all the welterweights and all the titles are at PBC, and like we talked about, promoters don't really want to share. Networks don't really want to share, you know, business wise and all that, which unless it financially makes sense, and you know, which is rare. It's rare in boxing. But Rocha, you gotta give it to him. He's staying active. Golden Boy's keeping him active. He's getting out there. And you know, it's hard to criticize these fighters when, you know, they don't really have the viable opportunity to fight the bigger names. And I'm talking about viable, like a realistic opportunity. I'm not talking about like, you know, it's there and they just pass it up or something like that. So the only next logical step to do is like, okay, well, I got to stay active in between now and then to keep myself sharp just in case I'm able to get it, you know? So he might not be fighting the big names and all that yet, but you know it. Who can he fight? I mean, what do you think about the fight first off, and who can he realistically fight? You know, I know Virgil Ortiz is obviously a stablemate, but I don't think Golden Boy really wants to put them together yet. I don't think they look at that fight like that. It's just they want one of them to get the title shot first. Obviously, they want Ortiz first because he's a little bit ahead, but. What did you think about the fight, and who does Rocha fight next? A realistic opponent, and then somebody who might be a bigger name and might be possible. What do you think?
Starting with the fight, because I was there. I thought it was a really good fight. I thought we actually saw a different type of Lex, because you could see early on Young had that kind of like Philly style, you know, arms low, and he was kind of looking to counter Lex. And I could see, I was kind of sat right near his corner, to be fair. Pressure. That's all his coach was saying the whole time, Hector, was pressure, pressure, mental pressure. Get in there, faint, move, make him think. And Lex just walked him down. From the Lex that we saw, Danny, from, I don't know, when I met you, what, 5-6 years ago, to the Lex that we see now, he's filled out, he looks big, he looks strong, like he's kind of got that men's strength, as everyone says.
I saw him for the first time, and yeah, I saw him when the older boy had those prospect fights, those club fights at downtown Los Angeles. There's a theater called their Belasco Theater, and, you know, Rocha was just starting out, you know. He was there with like Jojo Diaz and all those guys. I saw all those guys come up in that club series there. And, you know, now he's knocking on the door here. But, I mean, like you said, he pressured Anthony Young, and just like his coach was telling him.
Yeah.
And it obviously worked out, and it was an early night, right?
Yeah, he just broke him down, going to the body, switching it up. Heavy shots as well, super heavy shots. I just broke him down until Young... You could see he was kind of like getting a little bit tentative and trying to ride the shots, going to the ropes to try and take some of the sting off him. Yeah, great performance from Lex. Just a completely different style than what we've been used to. We've seen the evolution of him, you know, over the what, last 5 or 6 years since, you know, we first saw him on the scene in 2016. I think his pro debut was. Yeah, and he's still young, dude. You know, what's he say, 24th fight, right? 23 wins and, you know, one loss, and he's 25. Yeah. He's only 25 years old. So 5th fight since the start of 2022. So it just shows you how active he's been over the last year or so.
That's good, though. Like I said, at least he's staying active. You know, I mean, you got to give him that, because a lot of these times these fighters, they don't stay active. But there also is sometimes when you get to that big payday, then you kind of slow down. You're like, oh, okay, I don't have to stay as active anymore. Case in point, Andy Ruiz. You know? Andy Ruiz was staying pretty consistently active, and then he got the Joshua fight. He won, hit the lottery, got the rematch, kind of slowed down since then. But it's because he made a lot of money. So he's like, oh, okay, I don't have to fight multiple times a year now to make, you know, okay money. I can slow down and fight once every 26 months or something like that.
The second,
hopefully it doesn't happen with Rocha if it gets to that point.
The second part of your question, and kind of what you just said, I think he may. I think because of what you touched on earlier, the belts. So Rocha is the WBO mandatory and has been for some time. Obviously, that got put to the side because Crawford and Errol Spence managed to come to an agreement. They're facing each other July 29th in Las Vegas. Rocha has been super busy, you know, had like
Ortiz is a mandatory for what?
He was highly ranked in the WBO, but then I think he ended up, because he'd been out for such a long time, I think he's been moved along, shall we say. And according to what Oscar said, and according to what, you know, Rocha said, you know, they called out the winner of Errol Spence and Crawford. And weirdly, Oscar said that the, you know, Rocha will fight the winner of Crawford and Spence. And then the winner of that would fight Virgil Ortiz, which is kind of strange that they're making Virgil the kind of like the end boss, if we turn it into a computer game. When
I mean, it's a promoter tactic. You can't really be that mad at it. Like, it's a promoter tactic. You know, they're promoting their guys, and they all do it. They all do it.
Yeah, but to kind of answer your question, I think he may sit on the shelf for a little while to wait to see what happens with Crawford Spence. And because it's good to be active, like you said, you know, when you're picking up the W's, but what happens on the day that, I don't know, you get in there, you're not feeling it, just your body sometimes doesn't work, right? You know, it just is what it is. You're off pace, and then you come up and you lose, you know, and you end up wasting that chance. You then get dropped from the mandatory position, and You know, we've seen that before. Guys going in there, taking gimme fights, and then they ended up losing. Good example of a story we've told on here is you were ringside for Robert Guerrero getting beaten by an actual taxi driver.
And that David was Peralta. Yeah, in Anaheim, California at the Honda Center. I remember that.
And that was a tick over.
Guy was literally a taxi driver, like you said. That's nuts.
It happens. It happens. And, you know, we always, you know, we want them to fight, you know. But at the same time, is when you're in that position Lex is in, maybe just take a few months off. You've been super busy over the last 18 months. Wait maybe a little bit of time. Don't do like a Amir Khan and risk your whole career waiting for the Floyd Mayweather fight. But, you know, wait a little bit of time and hopefully that title shot will come up against the winner of Crawford and Spence.
You kind of cut out right there. What would you say?
I said he can just wait. He can wait his time. You know, just wait for the winner of Crawford and Spence. He's been busy.
Yeah. I mean, it's a waiting game with these. It's been like this for years. It's been like this for years in terms of, you know, PBC has the control of the welterweight division, all the titles, and they haven't been wanting to share. So it's been like that. You know, I mean, PBC, I mean, wasn't that the initial plan years ago that Al Heyman wanted to start a league within Showtime, like how the UFC had it, and he wanted to try, you know, they signed all the Golden Boy fighters with that whole drama was to, you know, when Oscar De La Hoya and they, you know, all the fighters that he had were signed to Al Heyman and PBC was created. They wanted to make a type of league within Showtime and Fox and all that. But, you know, and they do have a good stable, but, you know, it didn't really pan out to do like a UFC style. It just didn't work out. But they all would, every promoter would want to do that. They would all want to do that if they had the opportunity. They would all want to do that, you know, but it would affect fighter pay. It would. But yeah, Rocha gets the victory. Like I said, he keeps it going. I do wonder who he's going to fight next and what they're going to, you know, who they're going to put him in the ring, you know, with. It'd be good if Rocha's at the fight for Terrence Crawford and Errol Spence, if he's right there ringside, if, you know, he's like it. Get some TV time, maybe put him right there, you know, try to get him a ticket or get him to go, you know, he's right there knocking on the door, get his face on publicity, you know, even maybe throw him on the Showtime. If the broadcast team is willing to, or Showtime is willing to give some coverage to Rocha, bring Rocha on to the broadcast and interview him. You know, they might not because he's like, oh, he fights for the rival network and all that. But why not try to take advantage of it, you know? And Rocha's a good interview. He could talk well. He's respectful, you know. It could work. Moving on, fight previews. This upcoming Saturday, the 3rd of June, from the Little Caesars Arena in Detroit, Michigan, on DAZN. Larissa Shields, 13-0, goes up against Maricela Cornejo for the undisputed middleweight titles of the world. So the original opponent, Hannah Gabriels, right, had to pull out because of a dog bite? Is that what it was? And then she like tested positive for something that it was, or not a dog bite. She tested positive for a banned substance that she had said, and Lou DiBello, who's like her manager or her whatever, had said that her dog's medicine had contaminants of, and that's how it got into her like bloodstream or how it got into her skin or something like that. All right. Do we believe it? What do you think? I think that's the first time we've ever had that excuse, right?
It's that ludicrous. It just may be true. Because if you were going to
make it. You're right. I mean, it could be. It's not that we don't. I mean, it could be true, but it's just kind of like, man, I remember reading that. I was like, that's a first.
Yeah, because it's one of those stories where you're like, if you were going to make up a story, like, would you really go down that route? Like, she was applying, like, ointment or something from her dog's operation, which, you know, has this steroid in. You know, she was applying it, obviously got onto her skin, and then obviously gets into, you know, her bloodstream, stuff like that. So, yeah, it's that ludicrous. It may just be true because, yeah, you probably wouldn't make that as an excuse. You normally, they go down contaminated supplement. You know, it's in the food. So it's kind of that outrageous that, yeah, I maybe believe it.
When's the last time we've had a female fighter get popped for a banned substance?
In boxing.
Yeah, in boxing. Because I can't think of one. I mean, I'm sure there has if we look through it, but I can't think of somebody.
The one, Ginny Fox, who said that she got it from oral sex with her boyfriend.
Damn. Yeah. This isn't that kind of show, Mike. Come on, it's right. A boxing show.
Yeah, she was a Team USA, and she just turned pro with... she fought on Top Rank once or twice.
How long ago was that?
Ooh, the ban, which she actually didn't get banned. Say 2 years ago, like a year or 2 years ago, because it was all over, wasn't like massively all over Twitter, but I remember reading it on there.
At least she was honest.
Well,
got to give her that.
Yeah, maybe was she? I don't know, but yeah, that's how she claims that it was in her system.
That's nuts, man. But going in terms of analyzing this fight, Shields versus Cornejo. Cornejo obviously stepped in after that whole banned substance thing with Hannah Gabriels. Cornejo's got to, you know, been one of those fighters. I think she's out of here, the Southern California area. She's been able to get a lot of opportunities over the years. I mean, obviously it helps that the female division in boxing aren't, you know, they're not as deep as the men. That's just a fact. So, you know, women can get, you could probably have multiple losses and still get decent, I guess decent fights and decent exposure. So kind of goes like that, but she got a fight on the zone. She's the last minute replacement. I'm sure they already had told her like, hey, stay ready just in case. So she was already ready. What do you think? Is Shields a big favorite here?
Shields absolutely smokes her.
Are we talking about decision? Because we don't see too many knockouts in female boxing.
That's a good one.
When you say like that, does that mean that you're going to say, oh yeah, she's going to smoke her, like knockout?
Normally in a men's division, yeah, I would have said that she's too big, too strong, too powerful, too skilled. Mari doesn't like to get hit. But Shields, weirdly, for someone who looks as big and strong as she is, she doesn't get any knockouts. Like, you know, compared to like Savannah Marshall, I guess, even though Savannah Marshall lost to Clarissa Shields. Savannah Marshall obviously must have more pop in her punches. But Clarissa is obviously just a more technical, more well-rounded boxer overall, I guess.
So instead of saying she smokes Cornejo, how about saying that she outboxes Cornejo easily?
Yeah, I think. What am I going to go for?
Got to stay consistent here, Mike.
I admit, do you know what? I'm going to go for it. I'm going to stick to my guns instead of backing down, but a TKO.
You think it's the referee stops it or the corner stops it?
Yeah, I think she just beats it down because Cornejo's, yeah, she's just not that good, dude, if we're being honest. Right? She did it because she was an actress and she wanted to stick someone on a resume that made her stand out. And she took up boxing for that reason and then found out she had some pop and she became a boxer. You know, she doesn't like to get hit.
Well, nobody likes to get hit.
part and parcel of the game, right? You know,
right.
But there's a, you know, can you take it or do you kind of like turn away type of thing? That's the sort of difference in it. I'll give it to her though. She's done it the hard way, but right. She's been through about 17 different coaches. She's you know, California, Washington, Arizona. She's now in Vegas with Salas. So yeah, Indio, Joel Diaz as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shields, I think, beats her up and then TKO late.
TKO, huh? Yeah. Man, we don't really see too many stoppages or knockouts. So you're calling it. You are calling it. Moving on, news and notes section of this week's episode of The Last Round. Sunisa Estrada top-ranked Sunisa Estrada, who was formerly with Golden Boy, will now headline an ESPN Plus card on July 28th at the Palms Casino in Las Vegas, which is the night before the recently announced Terrence Crawford, Errol Spence Jr. mega fight in the same city at the T-Mobile Arena a day later, according to ESPN. I honestly think this is a very smart move, because how many times have we seen these big fights, these big events, like Canelo or somebody, on a weekend in Vegas, and then these promoters or other promoters who are, you know, they'll schedule other events, and sometimes not even fights. It's just like boxing events, like a boxing convention or something. They'll schedule them in the week of or the days leading up to the to that fight, or the day before the actual event, because they're capitalizing on all the media being there, a lot more fans than usual, boxing fans. So I think that was a smart move on Top Rank's part, because there's going to be a lot of media there for Spence Crawford. And the day before, they're going to be like, oh, let's just go check out the ESPN card with Estrada headlining. That's a smart move, right?
Yeah, the Palms, since it's been taken over by, you're going to have to help me pronounce it, it was San Manuel, and they changed name to, is it Yamava?
The casino in Southern California, yeah.
Yeah, they bought the Palms, so they're looking at trying to stick a lot more boxing there just to attract more, you know, visitors and, you know, bring some more money to the hotel.
Yeah, that's a pretty penny to pay, and they bought it. Good for them. Also, the Tyson Fury-Anthony Joshua heavyweight title fight is being discussed again. You know, I feel like this is like the 30th time in the last 5 years. Joshua's promoter, Eddie Hearn, or actually, it's being discussed for September, supposedly. So, but like we said, don't believe it until you see them both on the ring. This is one of those that you kind of have to look at it like that. They go back and forth, especially with somebody like Tyson Fury. For as much as he talks, you know, he's all over the place. Supposedly, the talks began within the last week or so between Fury's promoter, Frank Warren, and AJ's promoter, Eddie Hearn, and Matchroom. I mean, do we see it before the end of the year? There's also talks that maybe Saudi Arabia, you know, they're trying to offer money, get them over there. But I think we all know that the atmosphere in Saudi Arabia and the Middle East and United Arab Emirates just isn't the same as any other place, like in the US or in the UK. It's just the fans aren't the same. It takes away from the atmosphere. The fighters get paid a ton of money. They make a lot of money over there. You know, the promoters make a lot of money, but watching it on TV, it's not really the same. But what do you put a percentage on this, that we see this fight before the end of the year?
25%? Yeah. I mean, I want to see it, obviously.
Well, yeah.
Do I think we'll see it? No. Especially when you look at Eddie Hearn doing the interviews and, you know, some of the stuff that, you know, AJ said or posted. It tends to be one of those things where Tyson does it. He calls out everybody.
Yeah.
The fights or the talks break down or whatever, he blames, you know, he'll blame Eddie Hearn and Anthony Joshua, and then he'll go and fight flipping Manuel Char. You know, how many times has he done it? Remember last Christmas? Oh, let's fight Joshua. Joshua's like, okay, let's do it. You know, and then he, you know, social media wise, AJ agrees to everything, and then he's like, you've got 2 days to sign the contract, and then he ended up fighting flipping Derek Chisora. You know, I think a lot of people are kind of getting tired of, like, you know, the antics of Fury, where, you know, before it was kind of comical, but he's kind of redoing the same sorts of things over and over again. And we now can see it, like, calls everybody out, blames them. And then he'll go and fight somebody that's, you know, on a minute purse so he can charge 30 million while his opponent gets, you know, a million or 500,000 or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. But I agree with that. 25%. I agree with that figure in terms of probability. Also, within the last week or so, Alexander Usyk's promoter, K2, won the purse bid for his mandatory WBA title defense against Daniel Dubois. K2 Promotions' Alex Krasiak, I know we said that wrong, has said in an interview that the plan is for Usyk to face the WBA's top contender on August 12th in Poland. Usyk's camp earned the promotional rights to the bout, winning with a bid of $8.06 million per ESPN. I mean, I think Usyk knows, like, oh, okay, like, Fury and Joshua might fight. They might go different directions. Or, well, he already beat Joshua twice. He's not going to get Fury. So I think Dubois is the backup here to keep Usyk active, right?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting whether Dubois takes it, just because of, you know, they had some issues, from family issues, and he left Shane McGuigan, ended up signing with Chisora's old coach. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what happens there. Does he take it because, you know, he lost to, you know, Joe Joyce? Does he want to get in there with Usyk and, you know, probably get a boxing lesson? Because, you know, at the minute, you know, Dubois is still a little bit robotic, a little bit kind of like overly muscular, maybe would be a good way to describe it at the minute. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. But he may just take it because, I mean, it's going to be a good payday. I think it ended up being something like $6 million maybe for Usyk and around $2 million, I think, for Dubois when you actually see the splits.
Well, that's still a ton of money.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, that's still a ton of money. But yeah, like, this is obviously a backup, but, you know, just like we talked about Rocha, at least Usyk's trying to stay active, you know, especially with what's happening in his home country in Ukraine. Like, you know, it is what it is. And then also, unified light heavyweight champion of the world, Artur Beterbiev, will defend his titles against Callum Smith, Top Rank recently announced last week. Beterbiev will face the ex-super middleweight title holder on August 19th in Canada, where Beterbiev is actually from. Quebec City, that's where Beterbiev lives, in that general area. So, I mean, let's see what happens there. You know, I think Beterbiev is a big favorite here, but you never know. You never know, but I think that
no, Beterbiev... I know.
Well, yeah, I'm just trying to give Callum Smith a chance, but I guess not. I guess not. And then also, this is a weird story that just happened this week. Errol Spence Jr., who we touched on earlier, it was announced by a new management company, or I don't know how new they are. They're called Fighters First Management. They had recently announced, I think there's some people from Main Events who are associated with it. They had announced in like a couple social media postings that Errol Spence had signed with them. And, you know, they're like, oh, we, you know, now Fighters First Management Company has signed Errol Spence. It's, you know, this big old announcement. It, you know, it was getting talked about on Boxing Twitter and all that. And I think we all knew, you know, how it all works out, but then Errol Spence ends up tweeting, Oscar De La Hoya. And I think he did it as a troll tweet. He tweeted, congratulations to Errol Spence Jr. On your new management team or something along those lines. And then Errol Spence responded to Oscar De La Hoya and said something along the lines of, Al Heyman is the only one who manages my career. Nobody else, or something like that. So it's kind of like, I know if you dig into it, I think the main guy, or one of the main guys at that Fighters First Management, has been friends or with Errol Spence for over 10 years or so. And I think there was an article that said that he got him like the Everlast sponsorship deal and all this other stuff. And I mean, and then the press release that we got, it says that, oh, you know, if you want to try to get Errol Spence for an interview or try to contact Errol Spence, please email Heyman Boxing. And they give the email, and it's just like, oh, okay. So like, do you really represent him? I mean, I think we all knew like, okay. I think it's interesting. Like, I wonder what that Fighters First Management now thinks. Like, hey man, we announced you as like, we just signed you. And then you tweet like, hey, the only person who manages my career is Al Heyman. So you're kind of like undermining us, you know? So did they just do it just because it'll attract eyeballs to their management team? Or, you know, do they really have an agreement with him? Is he paying them a fee? Like, I don't see it. I don't see it. But I don't know. Maybe it could be just like a friend thing. I'm like, oh yeah, you can just use my name, but you never know. But I thought it was strange. I thought it was strange. And then Spence just kind of, you know, throws him under the bus by saying, oh yeah, Al Haymon is the one who, he's the only one who manages my career. So pretty much kind of saying like, yeah, that announcement that they gave out is fake, or yeah, there's nothing going on there. So it is what it is. We'll see how it works out going forward. But the loyalty to Al Haymon is real, man. People can say whatever they want, but the loyalty to Al Haymon is real. Would you say that Al Haymon, in terms of, and I don't even want to say promoters, because obviously he, legally speaking, he won. But in terms of like promoters or all the major players in boxing, going from like Eddie Hearn, Oscar De La Hoya, Bob Arum, Frank Warren, all that stuff, would you say that fighters have the most loyalty? If you had to pick whose fighters have the most loyalty, would you have to pick Al Haymon?
Probably. It seems like it, right? They always thank him in the ring and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it must be. I would say it's must be up there because he's obviously paying them a pretty penny.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's pound for pound, man. I think he's the guy. He's the guy. But once again, guys, thank you again for listening to this week's episode of The Last Round Podcast. Our episodes are now on Twitter. So hopefully Twitter seems like it's evolving into being a little bit more friendly into videos and podcasting and all that stuff. So hopefully, you know, we can kind of consistently work on that. And you know, if you listen to us on Twitter here, we appreciate it. But we can also, you can also listen to us on the audio apps, Apple, Spotify, all that good stuff. But once again, before we completely sign off again for the week, Mike, go ahead and let them know where they can find us and follow us.
We are at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. And be sure to join us next week. We've got the big preview of Josh Taylor, Teofimo Lopez.
I mean, I'm excited for that fight. I'm excited. Well, you know, I'm more excited just to see what kind of Teofimo Lopez we get. Mm-hmm. Even Josh Taylor. Yeah, this is a very, very intriguing fight. I'm excited to see that fight. And also Jaime Munguia fights that day in Southern California. So Jaime Munguia and Sergey Dovrchenko, which I think that's a pretty interesting matchup too. Dovrchenko, I still think has something left in the tank. So that's a very intriguing matchup too. So it's a good day of a boxing for the hardcore fan base. It definitely is. So for once again, for my co-host Michael Shepherd, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.